This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. I'm Chris Stafford. Catherine Haddad-Stahlo will be joining us later on in the program to talk about some of her favorite training tips. And we'll also hear how you can get started with do-it-yourself freestyle from Trenna Atkins. But before we hear from our guests, we have one item of news for you this week. The U.S. Equestrian Federation has announced the squad for this year's Pan American Games that takes place in Canada in July. The dressage competition itself is held between the 11th, 12th, and 14th of July. The 2014 FEI World Equestrian Games teammates Laura Graves riding Verdadis and Stefan Peters with Legolas 92 have been named for the big tour. And on the small tour, Kimberly Herslow from Stockton, New Jersey, will ride Caroli Enterprises LLC's Rosemarine alongside Sabine Schutt-Kerry from Thousand Oaks, California, who will be riding Alice Womble's Sancio. Also named as traveling reserves for the big tour, Allison Brock from Loxahatchee, Florida, with Claudine and Frintz Kundrin's Roosevelt, and Stefan Peters with Four Wind Farms' Rosamond. And on the small tour, Olivia Legoy-Wiltz from Reston, Virginia, will be partnered with her own Racing's La Noire. And I'm joined now by a former two-time FEI World Cup dressage finalist, Catherine Haddad-Stahlo, who also sits on the U.S. Equestrian Federation's Board of Directors as their dressage representative. She recently wrote an article in the USDF Connection magazine entitled Five Questions with Catherine Haddad-Stahlo. Her topic today is some of her favorite training tips. Hi, Catherine. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Chris. It's nice to be back. It's been a while.
It certainly has. And I think you're going to talk about some of your very favorite training tips, because I'm sure you've collected those over the years.
I certainly have. And in fact, I'm in Europe at the moment. I'm training in Germany, back in my old stomping grounds. So I'm getting them. I'm sort of revisiting the past and revisiting many of my favorite old training tips as we speak. Where would you like to start, the front of the horse or the back of the horse?
Why don't we start at the front then and work backwards?
Okay. I've talked a lot about contact in my career, and I do think it is the one of the single most important things that a rider has to work to develop as they're riding. Contact, however, is an extension of the seat. So if you haven't spent a lot of time working on a very good, balanced, independent seat, it's difficult then to also create a good contact. But once you do have an independent seat, I'd like to define that further for some people. What that really means is that you can hold the bit or touch or feel the bit in the horse's mouth through the rein independently of what you're doing with your seat. That is the type of contact that I like to teach people. And it usually involves getting the elbows slightly in front of the rib cage and maintaining a very supple arm, both in a rotational sense and a being able to bend the elbow sense, so that you can feel very carefully the metal bit in the horse's mouth, balance it in his mouth, keep it centered in his mouth, and create a contact that is absolutely equal on both reins without moving the bit in the horse's mouth. That is, in my opinion, the job of the rider. And if the bit moves in the horse's mouth at all, it should be because the horse is chewing on it, not because the rider is moving it. So that's just the beginning of how I feel about contact, but that would be my first tip.
Well, that's a very good one to start off with. And let's work backwards a little bit. What else would you recommend when you look at the progression of the horse? Or maybe we should have started from the back to the front because that's where the engine is, but keep going, Catherine.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We started with the front and how I feel about contact. One of the stronger tips I give to riders that are a bit more advanced is to ride what they can't see, and that would be the hind legs, the part of the horse that is behind your saddle. Ride that part of the horse. If you engage the horse's hind legs correctly, he should be moving with a lot of power, pushing off the ground, through bending all of the joints in his hind legs and pushing through his loin into his back and then even further up through the withers toward the bit. What I see a lot of times when I ask people to engage a horse, they don't really understand what that means. More often than not, they think it either means sitting down or speed the horse up. when in fact for me it means to make his hind legs bend a little bit more. Engagement means to call up a connection, or you know, when you engage a person, you start a conversation with them. So I prefer to think of engagement as starting a conversation with the hind legs. And depending on the horse's gait and the horse's conformation, the horse may have to reach further underneath his body from the hip, or he might have to bend his hock and step further underneath the body, placing the foot closer to the to land closer to where the girth would be on the horse if you dropped a straight line down from the girth. It may be that you need the horse to pick up his rear ankles more toward the belly. It depends. So engagement can involve a lot of different approaches to the movement of the hind leg. But I think if you have a very good contact in the front and you are able to engage the hind leg of the horse and push it through from behind, then you have the start, or you have the ability to truly connect a horse.
And then any further overall advice then, Catherine, when you look at the complete horse and the way it's going?
If you've started that much engagement behind and you're able to receive it in a very very kind and light way in the front, then it follows that your seat has to do the right thing for the horse's back, because you want the horse's back to move in a certain way in order to complete this connection. So in other words, if you have a light contact and you've got good engagement, but you can't sit on what you've created, you're going to break the connection, or you're not going to enhance it enough to make it a true and clear connection. In other words, you're going to have a lot of static in your phone line if you're not sitting correctly. So it follows that when I'm training people, I spend a lot of time teaching them how to sit the trot, how to sit the canter, how to sit the walk. There's three gates we have to learn to use our seat in. And the first steps I use in teaching riders is to teach them to follow the motion of the horse so that they don't interfere with it, so that whatever is naturally created by the horse can be mimicked by the rider in their seat. Now, if you stand, for instance, on a bleachers or on a chair watching a horse going a little bit beneath you in good dressage training, what you'll see is that the hips of the horse and the area of the loin shift left and right when the horse is in the trot, if he's really pushing off his hind legs. The rider's seat, however, does not do that, because if you're in the correct fitting saddle, you're going to be sitting well ahead of the horse's loin. Hopefully you're not sitting in a saddle that presses into his loin and destroys that left-right motion, because you want that. The motion of the front of the horse's back, which is right behind the withers, is more of an up-and-down motion. And that up-and-down motion is what the rider needs to learn to mimic. So if you're sitting the trot, you should not be shifting your hips left and right. You should be having a feeling like your pelvis is swinging up and down, or open-close. It kind of depends on how you describe it. So your pelvis is swinging as one unit, but it is not left and right. It is toward the front of the horse and then relaxing, and then toward the front of the horse and relaxing the pelvic motion. So it's easier to demonstrate than it is to talk about. But if you're able to follow the correct motion of the horse's back, and this is again assuming that your saddle is also not interfering with the motion of the horse's back, you will be able to create engagement behind and connect the energy that engagement creates through the horse's back to a light and soft contact. So those three things, of course, are essential to creating a connection at any level of the work.
Now, do you do any particular exercises with your students, Catherine, for them to feel that?
Oh, absolutely. In my stable, there's a lot of lunging done, especially for my students who are a little bit stiff or who are not really getting the feeling of the sitting trot the way I want them to, with a very good lunge line horse. And that's a horse who's quiet and safe, but also quite suspended in the trot. And again, with the correct saddle, you can position a rider skeletally, the way you want to see their skeleton draped over the horse, and you can take their stirrups away and teach them the correct motion of the sitting trot. I do this a lot with students if necessary. My more advanced students simply drop their stirrups and work on practicing that correct motion of the seat. At least, we laugh about No Stirrup November, but a lot of times in November, my whole crew, meaning everyone who trains with me and for me, end up taking the stirrups away for a month, and I do the same, and we all practice those things. Once you've actually learned the correct motion of sitting the walk, trot, and the canter, you can then begin learning how to influence the horse's motion with your seat in those three gates, which is a whole other ball game. First, you have to learn to follow. And again, doing it without stirrups is, I think, the best possible way. And then you have to learn how to influence the movement of the horse. You can make it bigger, you can make it smaller, you can make it more relaxed, you can put more positive tension into it. You can get the legs to respond in a snappier way. You can get the legs to stretch out and relax, both front and back. It all, you know, that's all related to how a rider sits on a horse, creates engagement, and then gives them a communication from the seat to tell them what to do with that engagement.
Now, some people use bareback exercises. They don't just take away the stirrups, they take away the saddle, so that the rider can actually feel the spine and feel the difference in those motions. Is that something that you practice?
No, it's not necessary in my training system, because my saddle is almost like riding with bareback pads, except that it does have a tree in it, has quite a flexible tree in it. And it's the only saddle that I've ever found, and I have tried quite a few, it's the only saddle that I've ever found that truly mimics the correct or the natural motion of a horse's back, so that when I'm sitting on my saddle, I don't have the need to switch to bareback. I can already really truly feel, very sensitively feel through my seat bones, the movement of the horse's back. It's a beautiful thing. That's why I do dressage, because I love that feeling.
And whilst they're without stirrups for that November, no stirrups November, do you do any other exercises? Any bending exercises, any leaning over or around to gain that independent core seat?
Yeah, sometimes if I have a rider on a lunge line, I will work some things with them, arm circles and letting go and holding their hands in rein position without actually having reins in them. Sometimes I'll work on lifting the knee to the pommel and dropping it back down. It all depends on the level of the rider and what I see in their body. You know from previous conversations that I'm a big teacher of what I have termed skeletal riding. I don't want my riders contracting their muscles while they're riding. I just want their bones draped into a certain position. And then I want their joints free to move. So if you're sitting in the trot correctly or the canter correctly, probably the only thing that's really moving are your hip and pelvic joints. The rest of you will be relatively still. So there are a few exercises I do on the lunge line to help people with that. But what I have found over the years, after having taught many, many, many people to sit the trot, is put them in the right saddle, put them on the right horse, take your stirrups away, and then wait, and they'll get it.
Thank you very much indeed, Catherine, for sharing your favorite tips with us this week.
You're welcome.
And we have more helpful information now in our education session, as a senior judge, FEI three-star para judge, and an L faculty member, Trenna Atkins, joins us to discuss how to get started doing your own freestyle. There is also an article in the USDF Connection magazine to accompany this segment. Trenna, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Give us a little bit of background as to why you come up with this topic and why you have the ideas that you do. It's based on your experience, obviously.
Yes, I actually started using computers for editing video probably about year 2000. And then I began using it a little bit to create, actually the word is term now is fan videos, when you take some sort of already established piece of video from, say, a movie or something and add a soundtrack over it, usually someone else's song, and matching it all. So I got a lot of practice in actually using the software in that way before I really started using it as much on the creating freestyles.
So what do people need to look for first of all then? Is it something that inspires them? Is it the music or is it the horse? Which do you put first?
Oh, are you creating just a freestyle in general? I think it's just an interest for the rider in wanting to ride their horse, dressage horse, to music. I mean, we all did that in our barn for years, putting music on the sound system and playing different pieces of music, and it found that some of them just made the horses go better. So, but you know, some people feel that riding a freestyle can be a little overwhelming. It is kind of stressful sometimes because you never quite know what's going to happen. But if you have that desire, and many people do, it starts pretty early on in your riding career.
All right, well, let's talk through the different components that you need then to do your freestyle, the DIY way.
Well, the first thing it would do is you have to figure your level, and there are certain USDF requirements to enter a lower-level freestyle that requires you have ridden at the level, at the highest testable level, with a certain percentage. So you already know how to do the movements that would be required in a freestyle test. Then you would start to consider, first of all, what movements are easiest for your horse and the way you want to present them, but also a little bit the music, because the music does dictate to some degree the pattern or the order. But the beauty of using some of the internet, or using the, the video editing software, is that you can actually rearrange the music slightly in order to better suit what you're doing with your horse. The very expensive freestyles are done, actually choreographed first, and then the music is created around that choreography through electronics. But we have we're a little bit less money spent with just using the software in order to actually adjust the music slightly for the horse's choreography. Yes, that's it. And then my first plan, after I decide to do a freestyle and I kind of had an idea what kind of music I want, is I start to record on a video camera the movements that I would like to do in my test.
What are the building blocks then to piece it all together?
Well, the video editing programs allow you to lay down your video of your horse's freestyle in the video line, and then the any music that you would select in the audio line, where you can then adjust. Or, for instance, the most basic thing is to find your trot music or your canter music when you want to, or your entrance, actually, your entrance music, and find a good place for it to halt, and then you can fade that music out and start your next piece of music. With the program actually lets you create different kinds of fades, so you can fade it slowly out, or you can mix it if it happens to be in the same key, and then you can go on to the next. So this is a way of at least making the transitions between the music pieces better.
All right, well, that all makes perfect sense. And then, of course, you're going to rehearse it at home. Talk us through the next stages.
Well, a lot of times the rehearsal, it actually happens more on the computer, because what you do then is you find something that really works, but you have to make sure that it matches exactly what the horse is doing, because on the video program computer, the tempo and the speed of which that is done is pretty much the same. The variable would be a different arena, a different kind of footing, a different atmosphere, but at your given place, that would probably remain the same. Then you have to make sure your choreography manages to have room for some sorts of changes in your horse being more energetic, or that's the developing of the choreography, which is a whole different topic altogether. And then the music, so as you make this pattern and you actually create the music, and you might have to rewrite something to the camera and put that in and change it up a little bit. But when you finish the whole choreography and the music, it becomes a great tool for you memorizing it, because you have a visual image of how your freestyle goes, and you don't have to continually ride the horse over and over again to the music, which is the old way we used to do it, and I did it plenty of times.
Right, so you're basically embracing all of technology, really, to make this easy for you, and you've obviously got it off to a fine art.
Yes, I've been having a lot of practice with it lately.
All right, so tell everybody then what they should look for first. First of all, what software and what technical equipment they need to get started, Trenna.
Well, I'm not familiar with the Apple products myself, so I don't really know how this affects it. Would it be on an iPad? I personally use personal computers which have a processor, and those require a separate software to run a video editing machine. Personal computers come with Movie Maker, which I have not had much success with. So I've purchased, my favorite is the Sony product of Movie Studio, which can be found at a really low cost on eBay, because we really don't need the real high-def stuff with lots of transitions and flying out colors and changing everything. We just need the basics. So it can run as low as $30, even $10. I've seen some of the older versions. So that's the way you can get into that, or there are some free ones online. And it just basically has to have a video editing ability that will let you create music, and then that music line has to be converted to an MP3 song, which would then be put onto a CD for you to take to the show.
All right, I understand. And this, of course, is something you spoke about in the USDF Connection magazine. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell everybody that, you know, that, that would be pointers for them to get started?
I think the best thing to do is to start really finding music that you like and riding your horse to it on a, as often as you can or on a daily basis, because often riding a horse to a good, steady tempo that's good for him is good for you as well. So I think that the, just the art of riding to music, even before you go into the jumping into the competing with it, is a really good tool.
Absolutely. The art of riding to music, which the horses seem to enjoy too, don't they?
They certainly do, especially if they can hear it. I've taken to lately to, I bought a very small little speaker that I can hook to my MP3 player and put in my pocket so that my horse can actually hear the music as opposed to just putting it on my earphones. And I can hear it. That doesn't help. And it seems to help.
Wonderful. Well, that's great advice, Trenna, to get started with DIY freestyle. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing your experience and how to go about this.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget to check out the current issue of USDF Connection magazine. You'll also find accompanying resources on the website at usdf.org in the eTrack section. If you prefer to listen to the podcast on the go, you can download it from the iTunes podcast store to any smartphone or tablet app, such as Podbean or Stitcher. So until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.